Matt's going to come up and speak to us about gratitude.
Spoiler alert. Okay, so we're taking 6 weeks on a, I think Matt said earlier, on a little Sunday teaching series called Healthy Household. The idea behind this is that we follow Jesus. We believe that his words are the words of God, and so they're practical and applicable in any time or place in the world. And so this is all about what following him looks like in some key areas of life. We called it Healthy Household because church is a big family. We need to work this out together and not in isolation. As has already been said, we're following on a, focusing on a word today is also a practice, something Christians have done throughout history, and that's the word gratitude. Let me begin, though, with a story. I wonder if you're familiar with the life of Corrie ten Boom. Anybody know of her? A few people. A century ago, she was a Dutch Christian from a happy and successful family of watchmakers. And then in the early 1940s, a Jewish lady turned up at their house, scared, of course, of what was happening across Europe, and by this point in the Netherlands. And the Ten Boom family took her in, and they went on to save hundreds of Jewish people from the horrors of the Holocaust. In 1944, though, the Nazis were told of their work, and the whole family was arrested and ultimately sent to various concentration camps. Corrie was sent with her older sister Betsy to the camp at Ravensbrück, which there's a picture of on the screen. When they got to Ravensbrück, they soon realised the barracks were not only overcrowded, but also swarming with fleas. Corrie wondered how she could possibly live in such a place. But Betsy said to her, her sister said, God had already given them the answer. She told Corrie to read the passage from the Bible that they'd got that morning, and it included this verse. Rejoice always, pray constantly, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus. And Betsy told her, this is it. This is God's answer. Give thanks in all circumstances. And we can start right now. Let's thank God for everything in this new barracks that we're living in. And Corrie said, like what? And Betsy said, well, like, we've been assigned together. We're not on our own. We're two of us together. That's a great thing. And they went on to thank God for that. And they thanked God that they'd been able to keep the Bible that they had. They had one Bible between them. They got to keep it. And so that meant they could read it and they could talk to other people about God. And they prayed. And then during the prayer, Betsy gave thanks for the fleas in the barracks. The fleas. And Corrie said, what are you doing? There's no way God could, you know, even God can't make me grateful for fleas. But Betsy said, no, give thanks in all circumstances. It doesn't say in pleasant circumstances. It says in all circumstances. Fleas are part of the place that God has given us. So they gave thanks for the fleas. But Corrie felt sure this time her sister was wrong. Fleas? Anyway, the days passed, filled with hard work and terrible guards. But every evening they gathered with other people in the barracks to read and discuss the Bible. They were grateful to do this because normally the Nazis would take Bibles away if they found out that people had them. Why didn't the guards stop them reading the Bible? One day they worked it out. It was because of the fleas. The guards refused to enter the barracks because they knew that they were infested with fleas. That meant that people could do whatever they liked inside the barracks without being interrupted or stopped. The fleas, it turns out, brought something good, and they were grateful. Now, is anybody, purely on the basis of that story, convicted about how great their life is and how lacking in gratitude they are? Hopefully everybody in this room. I know I am. Be good to grow in gratitude, wouldn't it? I want to look at a story from the life of Jesus. This is Luke 17, eyewitness account of his life, where you get some amazing insights into the power of gratitude. Here's the story. It says, now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus travelled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When he saw them, he said, go show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go, your faith has made you well. So the context of this is Jesus is traveling on foot. He's on his way to Jerusalem. Why is he doing that? Because as he knows full well at this point, he's on the way there to die. He's going to die for the sins of the world. He's on the way to do the most important thing that has ever happened. And yet this does not make Jesus too busy to stop and give time to people who are suffering and want his help. He's about to go into a village, and then he's approached by these 10 men. And this is because it would have been on the edge of the village, because if you had leprosy in that time, you were not allowed in the village. You'd have a leper colony outside. You'd have to live there. No physical contact with your family. Maybe you'd be shouting a conversation in the distance, but it would be extremely physically isolating. So these men are not just sick. They're alone. They're probably desperate. They've maybe heard Jesus is somebody who can do something miraculous. Maybe he can heal them. So they approach him. Now you can see from their words, they respect Jesus. They say, "Master, have pity on us." You know, this is a respectful address. They're not demanding the world. They're just like, "Oh, we want to be healed. Please heal us." And notice Jesus does not say, "You're healed," and then it's done. He just says, "Go and show yourself to the priests." Now, why is that? It's because if somebody was a leper and therefore could not be part of their community, in that culture, it was the priest that you would go to verify that you were clean. That if you were sick and then you got better in some way, you could rejoin the community if the priest signed off on it. It's a bit like having a doctor check you over. And so Jesus, in these words, is not only physically healing these guys, he's making sure they can reintegrate with society by following the customs that would enable that to happen. So it's a miracle. It's amazing. But as is so often the way in Bible stories like this, it's not the main thing. The miracle's not the main point here. Jesus does miracles all the time in the Gospels. It's what happens next that is the main take home of this story. Of those 10 men who basically got their lives back, who were clean, healthy, back with their families, in their own homes, probably back to work, only one of them came to thank Jesus. Only one of them, it seems, did anything to express his gratitude. Let's think about what this story tells us about gratitude before we get on to a few practical bits. Firstly, in Jesus, we receive grace even if we don't recognize grace. Did you know that God is so good, he gives even if he gets nothing whatsoever back? Jesus healed these 10 men. 9 of them, I guess, never spoke to him again, never came back, never had another interaction with him. But they were still healed. Jesus did not undo the miracle after he'd not heard from them for a few days. I'd have been tempted to be like, "Ungrateful so-and-sos, boom, have the leprosy back." Jesus isn't like me. That's a good take home. God does not require our gratitude in order to bless us. He will give to us whatever, but gratitude will change the relationship that we have with him. The very fact that it's not transactional, it's not like God gives and then we say thank you or the giving stops, that itself should push us towards God, to make us want to know him better, to have him shape our lives. Second big thought, gratitude means those who least expect grace tend to grasp it most clearly. Luke, the author, makes a point of saying that the grateful man was a Samaritan. Now, Jesus is Jewish, the 9 other healed men are probably Jewish, and the Jews and the Samaritans generally don't get on. As a Samaritan, this man would expect to be religiously, ethnically, socially excluded. In this story, both the insiders and the one outsider get the same gift. They all get the same thing, but only the outsider recognizes the giver. And that may be in part because he doesn't expect anything. He has no expectation of grace being given to him. It's kind of a thing, if you read all of Luke's gospel, it's this ongoing theme that most often those who recognize grace most clearly are the people that know they don't deserve it or they don't expect it at all. And I find this is still true today. Many people who seem to have their life together, have a nice life, can easily become a bit proud, a bit complacent, a bit blasé about following Jesus and what that means. But lots of people who come out of a complete mess and encounter Jesus get it. They get that what Jesus brings them is incredible, and they tend to be, not always, tend to be more thankful and joyful for it. Thirdly, gratitude is the way that we turn wow into worship. All the lepers, all 10 of them, cry out, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." All of them do what Jesus says and go to the priest and get checked over. All of them get healed. One returns. And that man praises Jesus in a loud voice. He falls at Jesus' feet. He thanks him. He's all in. Now, I'm sure that the other 9 were all amazed to be healed, because of course you would be. And as they sat down to dinner with their wives and their kids, they must have thought, this is awesome. I'm healed. This is great. But gratitude is a relational thing that turns the Samaritan man's amazement into worship. It's not about the miracle. They all get the same miracle, all 10 of them. It's not about the miracle. It's about his attitude. And so gratitude leads him towards Jesus, not just a way to try and just have a nice life. Here's the thing that we see. This is really important. Believing that Jesus is somebody special and can do things for you is not the same as having a natural relationship with him. Believing that he's someone special and he can do things for you is not the same thing as having a natural relationship with him. They're all interested, all 10 of them are interested enough in Jesus to get healed, but only one of them is interested beyond that. Everybody else, they're healed, right, fine, I'm done with you, Jesus, that's all I needed, see you later. Only one is interested in Jesus, the person. Fourthly, gratitude protects us from entitled spiritual amnesia. God gives you and me a million things plus every day, and a load of them we don't even know about. And it's very easy to be distracted out of ever giving him any acknowledgement whatsoever. The 9 men who were healed but didn't come back received grace. They were given something, but they treat it like entitlement, I think. They behave like having a nice life is a right, like they're just kind of owed it. For us, gratitude, when it's expressed, stops us from feeling entitled. It stops us from forgetting and just cracking on with whatever thing we want to do. It disciplines our brains and our hearts to acknowledge reality. We are owed nothing by God, nothing. And yet he is willing to give us everything, including his own son, the most precious thing he had. Gratitude is the smelling salts. And it's not just about acknowledging the facts. It changes the posture of the heart. And so we experience life more fully and more joyfully when we know that it's not just some impersonal universe that for some reason owes us a good time, but that the personal God, despite owing us nothing, lavishes good things upon us. The practice of gratitude wakes us up to reality. And final point on this, gratitude leads to the deeper salvation that we really need. When the Samaritan comes back, Jesus says to him, "Rise, go, your faith has made you well." Now, why does he say that? He was already well before he came back. That's why he came back. The Greek word translated here as well, sosokon, means saved. It's often translated as well or healed, but it actually means saved. All of the 10 men were, of course, healed physically. They no longer had leprosy. This was great news. They're well. But only the Samaritan man who comes back is described in the words of Jesus as saved. Now, you'll see throughout Jesus' ministry, when everybody else is really excited about miracles and healing and all of this sort of thing, he does do those things. But he's really interested in where people are with God, personally. Being saved from a terrible sickness in this life is a great thing. Of course it is. But it's actually just a sign. Jesus wants to save people from their sin. The real sickness is the sickness of the heart. The selfishness, the rejection of God, the leprosy of the soul, the thing that truly distances us from God and others more permanently. That's the thing Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem to deal with, remember? And the Samaritan man has faith in Jesus. He trusts Jesus. He's got no idea about the cross or anything like that. He couldn't have. It hasn't even happened yet. But he trusts Jesus, the person. And Jesus essentially in these words is saying, that's the thing. Trusting me is the gateway. Salvation's yours. Your faith in me has made you saved. Now you're spiritually well as physically. And central to all that was the man's gratitude. He saw what Jesus had done. He was thankful. Took him on a journey to trust and worship, and it made it personal. So, gratitude is more powerful than it may seem. It's not just remembering to say thanks here and there. It's a posture to life that makes an enormous difference to how you interpret everything that happens to you. Its core business in having a relationship with God. It acknowledges where you are and where he is. Let's have a little think about what gratitude might look like in practice. How do we do it? How do we grow it? Well, the first thing, I think, is to make it a habit. Make it a habit. A researcher once observed that the average person complains multiple times a day. You may have been that person. You may know people like that. We're all people like that, okay? We complain about traffic, weather, work, slow Wi-Fi, other people. Complaining has become our cultural background noise. And most of the time, we complain because we think that we deserve to have life go well for us. That we deserve for it to be comfortable and straightforward. Where did we get that idea from? Now, of course, we all prefer it that way, but why do we think we're entitled to a good time? Who are we expecting to guarantee that for us? And the thing is, when you've got an entitled posture and things don't go your way, you'll easily fall into a spiral of negativity. You get eaten by cynicism. Have you ever met somebody who's really old, who is just really negative? I'm not saying all old people are negative, far from it. But you know what I mean. There's this kind of archetype of the grumpy old person. But when they are, that's because the posture of entitlement, a lack of gratitude, has built over a lifetime. And now they expect the worst and they see the bad and they stew in the negativity. It's not just about whether or not they've had a hard life. It's about how they interpret what happens. Do they see and appreciate the good as a gift or focus only on the bad as a curse? We saw in that story, the Samaritan had exactly the same circumstances as the other guys, but he chose gratitude. And the practice of gratitude is powerfully formative. During the COVID years, a little while ago now, many people testified that gratitude practices, things like keeping a journal, naming joyful things each day, helped stabilize their mental health more than constant news consumption. The author Mary Davis said it like this: the more grateful I am, the more beauty I see. You might think it's the other way around, but she said, the more grateful I am, the more beauty I see. The very practice, the habit of gratitude, makes everything seem better. So why not build it into your day? Make it a part of how you pray. It's easy to just pray and ask for stuff that you want, and that's a good thing too. And it's important to say sorry to God for stuff, definitely. But how much do we just say thank you? I used to live with this guy who he had a notebook, and every day in the morning he'd pray, and he'd just in this notebook, he had a little column where he'd write one word about just something he was asking God for. And then he had another column on the same page of things that God had done or provided or that he was thanking God for. And he just would do this for a few minutes every day. And then sometimes he'd look back over recent weeks or months and see where God had given him things that he'd asked for and how that gratitude had then shaped him. Very simple. But a really great thing to do. Why not give it a go? But related to that, the second thing of practicing gratitude, consider what you actually have. Consider what you actually have. We said this about money a few weeks ago, but it's the same with this. If you sit down and think about it, there are loads of things to be thankful for. You could think about it in some of these basic areas. If you're feeling uninspired, think about the basics that you have. You know, food, water, and shelter. The relationships that you have, your friends and family. The possessions and wealth that you've got to use, the experiences that you have, which, you know, maybe vary between us, but, you know, whether it's the arts or whether it's travel or, you know, enjoying something, it could be work. You know, we complain about work, but if you've got a job, that's a privilege. That's a good thing. There'll be lots of good things about it. Think about the opportunities that you have, the things that you're able to do in the time and place that we live. Think about creation, whether it's scenery or weather or music or hobbies, all these great things God has given us to enjoy. But most importantly, think about, if you're a Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus, the riches that God gives you in him are incredible and endless. So that's just a one screen starter of things if you're feeling uninspired about what to be grateful for. Those are just some. If you started to drill into each one, you'd be able to list loads of others. Remember the 10 Boom Sisters? They were thankful for fleas, something that would probably be considered a bad thing, right? But for them, it enabled a good thing, and they were thankful, therefore, even for that. Thirdly and finally, use it to fight. You might not have expected me to put it like that. Our culture is designed to make us dissatisfied, isn't it? We are surrounded by adverts, unrealistic Instagram stuff, TV shows full of product placement. The aim is to constantly make us feel ungrateful. Like we need more, apparently. Always better, always the next thing. More, 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 more. I think we're being exploited for money, to be honest with you. The author Richard Foster puts it like this. The unreasoned boast abounds that the good life is found in accumulation, that more is better. Indeed, we often accept this notion without question, with the result that the lust for affluence in contemporary society has become psychotic. It has completely lost touch with reality. In the face of this, gratitude is a weapon in the battle for the satisfaction of your soul. Gratitude is the antidote to a lot of the anxiety that dominates our culture. Why is that? Because anxiety is worrying that something will happen, and gratitude is celebrating that God has already proven to be trustworthy. It's your chosen words telling your heart that it's okay. It's okay because God can be trusted. It might not free you from anxiety overnight, but like most things, gratitude over time will change you for the better. I think we should respond in a moment with some gratitude. And we're going to do that when we sing. But I'd like to get us all to just pray out in a second. But just on the back of that, before that, just want to finish on these words. This is from Augustine of Hippo many centuries ago. And he just said, a Christian should be an alleluia from head to foot. We know we've got loads of things to be thankful, grateful, celebratory about, don't we? So before Josh and the others come and lead us further in worship, I just wonder if we don't have to stand up, just in our seats, just a few of us could just call out things that we're just really grateful to God about today. And it could be things that are massive things, it could be tiny things. It all counts, that's all stuff to be grateful for. So I'm going to sit down, Josh will come back up in a minute, but in the meantime, just shout out in prayer things that you're grateful for.